WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The city of Louisville, Kentucky is reeling after four people were killed and nine others wounded when a gunman opened fire in Old National Bank and live-streamed it. CBS's Roxana Saberi is in Louisville.
Troy Haste saw the gunman moments before running for cover.
Whoever's next to me got shot and hit bloods on me from it.
Louisville Metro Police have identified the shooter as a man in his 20s, Connor Sturgeon, an employee at the bank.
Ultimately, the suspect did die at the scene.
When it was over, four people were shot and killed, nine taken to a nearby hospital, including rookie officer Nicholas Wilt, on the job just 10 days, who was shot in the head.
Officer Wilt has undergone surgery and is reported to be in critical but stable condition. Democrat Justin Jones gets his seat back in the Tennessee House.
The people of District 52, 78,000 people have a voice in this chamber once again.
Jones and Justin Pearson were expelled from the House for taking part in a gun control protest on the House floor. Representative Gloria Johnson kept her seat by one vote. More from CBS's Mark Strong.
Jones's district included part of Nashville. And in a special session, the city's Metro Council met to appoint an interim state rep. As expected, they named Jones in effect to replace himself until Tennessee's governor sets the date for a special election.
Justin Pearson could be reappointed on Wednesday. Sources tell CBS News that former President Trump is scheduled to sit for a deposition Thursday in the Manhattan offices of New York Attorney General Letitia James. It's in connection with the $250 million lawsuit filed by James's office, accusing Trump, his company, and three of his kids of widespread fraud. Trump appeared for a deposition last August before the suit was filed and invoked the Fifth Amendment more than 400 times. Former Mad Magazine cartoonist Al Jaffe has died at the age of 102. That according to the magazine, which released a statement calling him an incredibly gifted man who touched our hearts and never failed to make us laugh. Gary Nunn remembers.
According to Peanuts creator Charles Schulz, Al Jaffe could cartoon anything. Though he worked on comic books and newspapers, it was his contributions to Mad Magazine starting in 1955 that he will be largely remembered for.
It was like paradise.
The magazine gave the writer-artist a lot of freedom. He originated the long-running feature Snappy Answers to Stupid Questions. And he created the fold-in where a new picture and caption emerge when the page is folded in.
Very, very simple, but it was audience participation.
Gary Nunn, CBS News.
On Wall Street, stocks ended mixed today. The Dow closed up 101 points. NASDAQ fell 4 points. This is CBS News.
Taxes are due. Have you filed yet? Don't worry. Jackson Hewitt is racking up the assists. They will get you filed or an extension before the deadline. Beat the crowds by going to Jackson Hewitt today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
O'Reilly Auto Parts provides more than just the right parts for your repair. Our professional parts people can also offer free check engine light diagnosis. We can scan your vehicle and provide a list of possible fixes. Find the right parts for you or recommend a great local repair shop. Don't ignore your check engine light. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jenny, senior designer for Cleo & Wolf, and this is Behind the Designs with Boot Barn. Cleo & Wolf is a vintage-inspired, effortless collection with a country sensibility. Each design is thought out and crafted so that it becomes a special staple in her wardrobe. Even if it's just an article of clothing, there's so much meaning to that. In her most authentic, natural state is where her beauty and her confidence lives. Cleo & Wolf, only at Boot Barn.
Locally grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you. No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10:06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10:06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Everyone is entitled to a free credit report from each of the three main credit bureaus once every 12 months. Yet only one in three Wisconsin adults actually obtain the report each year. An easy way to remember to check your report is to simply mark your calendar. Picking dates like February 2nd or 2-2 make it even easier to remember. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and don't forget to keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 47 tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 78. Mainly clear skies. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 56. Sunny skies Wednesday with a high of 81. 79 Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 64.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
For, I think it's Société Générale. It's a big French bank. They're one of the big players globally. Been in business about 159 years, they say. But this guy, you know, got a little attention last week. You know, taking my word, greedflation, I don't own it, but that and saying, look, this could be, as I've been saying for a while, we're in the final throes of capitalism. This could be the end of the road if we don't do some things, that it's gotten so unequal that, you know, maybe we're going to have societal unrest. And I look at what's going on in France with working people going into the streets and saying, no, you're not going to raise our retirement age from 62 to 64. And me scratching my head going, we can't get Americans into the street to do anything. Imagine. But I thought about this, and one of his arguments is we need price controls. And here to share some thoughts on, are we seeing the end stage? Is there something we can do with this massive inflation? And is price controls the answer? That's why I've asked our good friend Mateus Vernengo to come talk with us. Mateus is an economics professor at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
So do you agree with this guy? I mean, is he onto something here that, you know, this is, you know, capitalism dying, the end? Do you buy into that?
Certainly we are. I mean, it's a very bold prediction. What we do know is the following thing. So I'm not sure that it's the end of capitalism, but it's the end of, what we are seeing, and we're in danger in the U.S., it's the, you know, the end of democratic institutions. We're risking that. So people that are, you know, sort of angry about the inequalities, the effects of inflation on their everyday life, the conditions of, in the labor market. I mean, labor market, the numbers were reasonably good, but I mean, in general, not unemployment level, but the sort of harsh conditions that we have had for 40 years. We have talked about this in the program several times. So I think that suggests that we might veer away from democratic capitalism. I don't think that, you know, there is any danger that corporations are going to be brought down by the pitchforks and the peasants with the pitchforks. I wish that was sort of, you know, and socialism was around, some sort of form of democratic socialism was around the corner. But what I see and fear that it's a risk is more some degree of fascistic takeover of democracy. And you know, I'm sorry to say, That I think it's a danger. So while I disagree on the kind of danger that that we have in the system, I think he's not wrong in suggesting that there is something deeply wrong with capitalism, and that there is something deeply dangerous about what's going on. Not just in the U.S. I mean, the U.S. is sort of problematic because we are at the it is still the center of it's 25% of global consumption. It's still the largest, if not in absolute terms, economy. It's one of the largest and certainly the central economy in the world economy. So all of those things, make the situation in the U.S. considerably sort of, concerning.
Yeah.
Now, so you said, I would agree with that general assessment, yes.
Yeah, you said we're not going to get the pitchforks and go after the corporations. And I would argue it's because we've been fed on a silver platter that it's Joe Biden and government, especially progressive policies and Democratic government, that's the problem. And I get this from people a lot. Well, it's all Biden's policies, all these, these socialist problems, all this safety net stuff that's caused this. I'm going, no. It's monopoly. It's the fact that you got a handful of corporations who control virtually everything we touch.
And, that's insane. We have had exactly what we have had for 40 years since, Reagan. It's the undoing of those, semi mixed economy, socialist, social democratic policies that, provided a safety net. So over the last 40 years, we have gone in the other direction with both governments. There has been, with both parties, Republicans and Democrats, Clinton certainly was in that direction, ending welfare as we knew it or whatever it was. The sort of mild pushback that we got was important, but, mild. So we got extension of public health through private means with Obama. And we got now for the first time, we have some policies to try to reshore manufacturing jobs to the United States, some pushback on trying to hold the line, on further privatization of our economy and so on and so forth. But, even with all of this, Biden couldn't pass everything he wanted on the fiscal, in fiscal policy. We haven't been able to increase the minimum wage. The minimum wage remains, at the 2009 level. So if this is, socialism in action, you have to be deluded. And that's another problem of what we have had. And that's why I don't think that socialism and the end of capitalism, it's the danger. It's, misinformation is widespread and it has sort of furthered, some of the structural problems of the American economy. So I think that we're in danger of, the danger comes from the far right, not from the left, including the violence, I should say.
Now, the reason I bring this up is because his prescription was maybe looking at price controls. And, everything that I've learned about price controls over the years was it's all bad and brought down the Roman Empire or whatever the argument is. I know we had some in the 70s and I've had people tell me, no, that led to stagflation. Price controls work? I mean, look, again, this is just what's being thrown at me. That's why I've come to you, the expert on this. Is it time for price controls? And I'm guessing this guy who's a French economist is saying for France and for the rest of the world, because I don't think it ever happens here.
Yeah, no, I don't think. I think you're right. So, in fact, he cites a paper by Isabella Weber that it's actually on the journal I edit, and I have a paper too. So I'm going to talk to this guy because he cites Isabella, but he doesn't cite me. And I have a paper on the same issue of the Review of Keynesian Economics. But the point is, yes, price controls do work. They have worked historically. In the U.S., the typical example of price controls was during the Second World War. They were extensively used, and they were very efficient in holding inflation. We still had inflation, but on levels that were more acceptable. And Nixon used them. That's correct. That it's the last time that they were used. They have been used in Spain with some degree of effectiveness. For example, one of the items that inflation has been high in the U.S. it's rent. Rent control is a price control, and they do work. And so Spain has had some of that, and they have had good effects. In Bolivia, they have them. Bolivia has had one of the lowest inflation rates in the world. Part of what they have is they have chains of markets that are government owned, and when some company decides to hike the price of something that it's a basic good that the population has to consume, you know, whatever, flour, you know, they sell their stocks of, you know, of in the public stores of flour at a lower price, and, you know, they hold on the price line. And so price controls in places in which the government owns a significant large, a portion of the energy, you know, companies, they control prices, and that has happened. And so that has allowed to, you know, hold the price of, say, gas in many countries. So they obviously can work. And what's central for them to work is you need a bureaucracy and an infrastructure, you know, that allows you to go and control prices. And you need obviously political backing for this kind of stuff. And exactly that goes to the point that you said, although they can work, it's highly unlikely that they would even pass in the United States. And if they pass, that we would give the instruments for them to work. So, for example, we don't give the IRS the instruments for them to go. I mean, if you wanted to catch all of the, you know, tax evasion that there is in the U.S. from the very wealthy, we can. We have the funded. You know, I mean, part of the point of Republican governments is that, and administrations, and, you know, when they're in control of Congress, is they defund. And they make sure that government is inefficient. The old joke that, you know, they think government doesn't work, and when they you know, go to work, they, you know, to government, they make sure it doesn't. And so I think that's the problem with price controls. It's not that they cannot work; it's that it's very unlikely that we can get that implemented. And there are many places in which they should be. You know, for example, medication, you know, insulin. Which the Biden administration tried to do something about that. So that should be controlled. So right. Markets shouldn't be determining, and corporate shouldn't be a for-profit thing. So this, you know, it's a basic thing. So who thinks that this thing that, you know, the guys that invented didn't have a patent for this, that they gave it up for humanity so that we can cure something that it's a terrible disease. You know, it's cheap to produce. And we're allowing people to die in the United States when, you know, in developing countries, they get this for cheap and they don't die on this. We're allowing people to die in the United States because they don't have insulin. So that's the kind of thing in which price controls do work. And any decent person with half a brain knows that. So you don't need to be, I'm sorry to say, an expert to say that.
Any decent person with half a brain. Wow. I don't know what segment of the population that in this day and age that would exclude. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Mateus Fernango, professor of economics at Bucknell, talking about the most recent piece over at Fortune Magazine, asking, are we in the end of capitalism? Price controls possible? Now, as I was thinking about this, you know, I was thinking about, you know, as a truck driver, I go back to the 70s. From the end of World War II up until Reagan, really, you had the ICC deciding what the rates were. You had until 96 here in Pennsylvania, you had electric rates that had to be sought after. So it's not unprecedented to where we have these kind of these price caps.
The price controls were a normal thing. They were part and parcel of how capitalism always worked. I mean, prices are to a great extent, I mean, obviously, there is an element of price that they involve covering your costs and making some buck for, you know, the owners of capital. But, you know, from then on, you know, prices are administered prices. They're managed. And so you know, and there are many conditions in they vary from sector to sector. But, for example, we made decisions in the United States to allow pharmaceutical firms to take control of a great degree of what and how they price their medications. The model is that they run the risk. They don't. You know, the federal government through the NIH gives them lots of money to do research and development and whatnot. So the risk part of, you know, doing the research to whether they're going to find a medication is paid by everybody. But they act as if it's their risk, and hence they have to have a huge reward for the risk that they incurred.
Right.
And we allow them then to get out with murder. And in this particular industry, and that's why I'm going back to pharmaceutical, it's murder. I mean, in the, you know, in the trucking industry, you know, it has social consequences. You know, they overwork, you know, truck drivers, you know, because in order to make a buck, they'll have to do and drive, you know, too many hours and so on and so forth. We give, you know, Amazon tells you, you know, next day delivery. So we have all sorts of violations of, you know, of what's reasonable conditions of work and so on and so forth. But you know, they don't necessarily directly kill people like, you know, the insulin issue or whatnot and other things.
That's an excellent point. But we're sold on this. And you as an economics professor, I'm sure you know this as well as anyone. We're sold on this idea of the invisible hand, that the market will always decide. And the market knows best, Matthias. The market knows best. And if you don't like it, you can abstain. Because in a free market, you know, one of the key tenets is that you have the ability to not participate. But as you've laid out in pharmaceuticals, I don't know how many people can choose not to participate, especially if you're a diabetic in need of insulin.
Yeah, well, I mean, this notion, you know, in all fairness, I think that part of the story of we believed in the invisible hand up to the point in which we got afraid that the system would sort of tumble down. And that was the 30s. So in the 30s, there was a decision that that market would be allowed to play up to a point, but under certain areas, we would guarantee. So that's when we came up with, you know, guarantees of income in old age, Social Security, you know, minimum wage, certain regulation and rights in the working sort of environment. So all of those things came because capitalists were afraid of the end of capitalism that you were talking here. I think that the huge difference of that period with the current period is that the threat of the end of capitalism in the 30s was more real than people tend to think these days. So I don't think that the Chinese, you know, sort of alternative is seen as an alternative in the way that in the 30s, you know, the Soviet, you know, the Russians were seen as a possible alternative. So that sort of, you know, sort of scared the hell out of capitalists. And I think that played a role that we don't have these days. And so, you know, the level of organization of the working class, it's not where it was. So we're not in the same place historically. That's why I fear that, you know, if there is sort of a backlash and the system is sort of tumbling, it's not in the direction of, you know, of a better system, as, you know, the article suggests. But I'm sorry, I'm very afraid that, you know, and to be blunt, I'm very afraid that, you know, forget price controls. We're unable to pass legislation to God knows what will happen this summer with the debt ceiling. We are already with the Fed that it's hiking interest rates, stop on inflation that has nothing to do with excess demand, that may already have, you know, led us to a recession, even if we manage to pass all of the fiscal difficulties. And then we'll have an economy, you know, coming into the election next year in which, you know, we have a recession. The war may still be going on and inflation might still be sort of raging, you know, although it has been down for a while. And we have, you know, Trump that, you know, it's indicted, but maybe not in jail, maybe not ineligible. And it seems to be up in the polls and we get up, you know, with another presidency of Trump. It's not unthinkable. And I don't know what the consequences of that.
Well, we'll see where it goes and where it takes us. But, Matthias, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your expertise and thoughts on this. Again, we'll have you back to talk about this more because this to me is one of the most important stories that nobody's talking about.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend Matthias Venango. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed a $150 million personal income tax cut, $36 million corporate tax cut. Any idea who that's going to all go to? They claim it's going to put money back into the pockets of 1.1 million Arkansans. And I guess it's only the beginning. This is just the beginning. She says they're going to continue to cut the income tax, to wipe it off the books. And this made me think today. This made me think, as I've said before, you've got states like Arkansas that are Huckabee Sanders herself said, you know, we don't want that hand of Washington doing anything. Well, take your money. Take your money. Oh, will we? And we'll take a lot of it. But you don't get to have any say here. And this is one of those moments where I'm reading through this going, couldn't this money have been spent better? Maybe, I don't know, working on ending child hunger and, you know, homeless veterans, infrastructure, you know, any number of things. Because I've been through Arkansas. Sorry, there's a lot of work needs to be done there. And we've got a federal government who's doing a lot of work there. So it's interesting that we're taking federal dollars and handing it out. And remember, you remember during the pandemic, states were given a whole bunch of money to run social programs, and a lot of them used that money for tax cuts for rich people. This is where I you know, in talking with Mateus and looking at you know, this article over at Fortune, which I think extremely, extremely important, and this the position that this Albert Edwards takes is something we should be talking about. Because as Mateus said, we're not our grandparents' generation. We're not that generation of working people that are out in the streets fighting for better opportunities. We're now, you know, fighting over the worst stuff. I mean, they're talking about raising retirement age to 70. They're talking about, you know, all kinds of stuff. Because, you know, because as the one Republican guy, you know, people want to work till 70. Yeah, maybe there's somebody out there who does, but a lot of people, not so much. They'd like to retire and play with their grandkids. Or, you know, just have a life. But I look at this, and the fact of the matter is, you know, who was it over at the Roosevelt Institute who said that 52% of the inflation, 52% of the inflation that we're suffering under is because of this greedflation, because of these corporations. And, you know, I cited the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City's report that found that markup growth had increased in the ratio between pricing and what the farm. So what they make it for and what they sell it for, that markup growth is enormous. And that was how did they put it, a far more important factor in driving inflation than anything else? The fact that corporations saw an opportunity and there was nothing there to hold them in check. There was no competition because there's only a handful of companies doing it. This kind of, and in the where there is a modicum of competition, there's collusion. Because interestingly enough, they're right around the same area. You know, I had a conversation today with somebody about eggs. And I said, you know, you ever walk into a store and find no eggs? I remember the toilet paper scares of the great pandemic of 2020. I remember, you know, the fact that you would go into the supermarket and there were no rolls. And there's no Sears catalog coming anymore. So who knows what you were going to do? I remember at the time going, not surprising they're selling a roll of toilet paper for $100 on eBay. Some idiot might buy it. But you go to the grocery store now, eggs are plentiful. And as the guy said today, I go, no, I've never noticed there to be a shortage of eggs. Oh, of course. So then why the really inflated cost? I mean, the multiples of the original price. Profit. Pure, unadulterated, greed-driven profit. Now, look, I'm not somebody who's a...
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bride. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm William Shatner. I've been around a long time, but I'm truly humbled when I see the real battles our brave, paralyzed veterans have faced defending our freedom.
I was on a routine patrol, and we were in the desert of Kuwait, and the vehicle flipped and landed on top of me, which left me paralyzed from the waist down.
Okay, folks, this is heroism. That's why I'm proud to support Paralyzed Veterans of America. Go to PVA.org to learn how you can make a difference.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Meet Ingrid, fiery spirit, caring grandma, proud trucker.
I've logged more than 4 million miles in my truck. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. I was driving outside of Ohio when a gentleman stopped suddenly in front of me. But it takes my 80,000-pound truck 200 yards to stop. I'd given myself extra room, but it's not a chance worth taking.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 47 tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 78. Mainly clear skies. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 56. Sunny skies Wednesday with a high of 81. 79 Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 64.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
With a blanket decree that all local ordinances restricting corporations are overruled by state law.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, most recent ABC News Ipsos poll finds 53% of Americans polled believe Donald Trump intentionally did something wrong. I don't know if this is going the way the Trumpers want it to go, but when you got 53%, a majority of the country saying, yeah, he did something wrong and on purpose, and you have another 11% saying, yeah, he acted wrong, but he didn't really mean it. So you got 64% of people going, yeah, he broke the law. It's a pretty big deal. Interestingly enough, only 20% believe Trump did nothing wrong. That means some Trumpers, like a neighbor who is now flying a Ron DeSantis flag, are turning on the Donald. And look, he's broken another rule, another crime. This time, evidently, he didn't meet the deadline for disclosing his personal financial holdings for campaign finance purposes. Now, it's not a big deal. It's a $200 slap on the wrist. But again, it shows, one, not really caring about the laws, and two, just how weak those laws are. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, and all we can get to, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So we surprised that many people think Trump did something wrong?
I was surprised. Now, also in an additional poll that I saw, they had 70, and this was really interesting, the vast majority of people felt that the charge was shaky, okay, you know, on the surface. And I think that's because so many people have, you know, talked about the charge itself being not the most solid charge, right? But it goes from that to 60% think he did something wrong. So even if they think that the charge was, you know, maybe not well written or, you know, not intense enough or whatever, it's still the vast majority think, you know, believe that he's done something wrong. And then with the ABC News Ipsos poll, then that you had just talked about, majority of Americans, like you said, 53% believe he intentionally did something illegal. So the numbers for him are still there, base-wise, somewhat, but they're not there as they should be. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and what I find interesting is most of the people who I know who are the big red hat clan, they'll say, yeah, he did it. Yeah, he did something wrong, but we don't care. And that's the thing that these polls don't talk about. How many people go, yeah, so what? He's done so many other worse things than lying on a little piece of paper. We don't care about this.
I think, you know, in general, obviously, it's really going to hurt him with the independents. You know, the people that have switched back and forth, people that are vote splitters, they've went from different parties, you know, through maybe the last two or three elections. With them, I can't see where he really could bring them home to himself. Yeah. unless the president just somehow really, really falters, and then people throw up their hands and say, "What are we doing?"
No, I think he's hurting himself. I mean, really, I mean, sure. That speech he gave on Tuesday after the indictment didn't do him any favors. And I love the way Chris Christie framed it. Saying he sounded like a guy at a bar that you sat next to who all does nothing but talk about a bad divorce. That sounded, that was the perfect frame.
Right. Yeah, Christie has a good way with words. And then, of course, Barr, his comments on the Sunday show. So, overall, Trump's lost some numbers. And if anything else happens, that will further erode the numbers. So, got some time. We'll see what happens. The other thing is, this trial is not going to be formulated into motion until December, according to the prosecutor's side, and Trump's lawyers want to take it into the first of the year to begin. And I'll tell you right now, with everything that goes on in people's lives, and you know this, you know retail politics and what counts, with everything going on in people's lives, the last thing that people who are trying to, you know, get out there and eke out a living and take care of their family, the last thing they're going to want to hear week after week, month after month, is this trial.
No, you're absolutely right.
They're not going to want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it. I'm already tired of it. Because, look, I think I...
it hasn't started yet. Yeah, we're tired of it.
This is one of those things where, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I've talked to a number of people who are, and people who are federal prosecutors and folks who know this. This is a little bit of a stretch. And that's where the argument is. Now, did he break the law? Yeah. They should have charged him with what you would have charged any other Wall Street criminal with when they lie on a report. Fine him, charge him a huge fine, or, you know, make him plead guilty to a misdemeanor, and then move on. This moving it up to trying to make it a felony by tying, I don't know. I think it's going to be difficult to prove, but we'll see.
But I talked to attorneys, and one in particular, who does not like Trump whatsoever, and said basically exactly what you just said. And this attorney doesn't, that's why I called him on purpose, you know, to see what he thought. And he said the same thing. But the other thing is that if Trump is, you know, cleared of this, or there's a mistrial, or, you know, who knows, with a jury, somebody talks to somebody, a relative then talks to the media, all these scenarios can happen with this because, you know, this is a high-profile case. But even if he is cleared, it's, you know, people that are out there that are, you know, have switched again, maybe went Trump to Biden, and now what are they going to do? Those people, too, may look at this, and they may not say, oh, he was innocent. They may say, well, he got by with one more. You know? They might say that. Yeah. So there's variables here that, let's face it, are not to the favor, at the end of the day, to Donald Trump.
Yeah, but don't you They're think also, I mean, you know, the same way in the old days they used to root for Bonnie and Clyde and Pretty Boy Floyd and the criminals of the day. Oh, he stuck into the system. Don't you think there's somebody out there looking at Trump going, yeah, he's breaking all these rules. He's criming at every opportunity. And he's flipping his nose at this just makes him even more appealing to some.
Yeah, but remember, Bonnie and Clyde and Pretty Boy Floyd and them, they actually threw some of the bank's money to the people. they actually gave them something, all right?
I forgot about that.
Remember that. Trump's not passing out money, so they did. No, I see your point, and you're right. There are a certain amount of people that say, you know, the system is inherently, you know, this isn't a Democrat or Republican thing necessarily, but some people will say the system, you know, is inherently bad, and these people are all political, all of them, you know, the whole ball of wax. And, yeah, there'll be some people that will think that way.
Yeah, but at the end...
Then there's going to be the deep state believers.
Yeah, but at the end, I think Bonnie and Clyde did end up on the side of the road with a bunch of bullets in them.
Oh, yeah.
If I remember right.
They did.
There was that. I wanted to get your thoughts on Jim Jordan from your state of Ohio. Did you see last week them threatening to subpoena Alvin Bragg? Is that something normal?
Well, it's something that shouldn't be done. You can't do that. And if they do that, it's nothing more than interference. Now, they knew they wouldn't be successful because there's no way that Alvin Bragg is going to, number one, comply with that, or number two, have to comply with that. And then the other thing is, do they really want to take, you know, the House to a vote on this? I think it, from Jordan's end, it was more, you know, trying to throw that out for Trump favor, number one.
Yeah.
Throw it out to attempt to, quote, rattle the prosecutor, and throw it out there to get it out there that, oh, the prosecutor's corrupt, we should drag him into Congress. I think that was the motive. I know Jordan can't believe that he will actually be able to get him there and do anything about it. It's a pending court case. And whether anybody likes the case or they don't, it's a pending court case. And you just can't drag the prosecutor out there.
Yeah,
after the case is done, if they want to try something, they could do that.
Because I was wondering
if they have grounds.
Yeah, I've never heard of such a thing, and I was wondering if your time in Congress, no. you'd have ever gotten involved with, attempting to strong arm a prosecutor. I just was wondering if that was something that had happened before.
It doesn't happen. The only time that somebody was hit, but that was a whole different world, was Alberto Gonzalez, because he was political.
Yeah.
Now that's different. That wasn't a pending case. That was a series of firings and political steps by Gonzalez that, got the attention, including the attention of Republicans. And this is different. This is a court case. It would be sort of like Gonzalez at the time was involved with a sitting case, and then they drug him before there during the adjudication of the case. And you can't do that. I don't recall any time where an active case that a judge in an active case or the prosecutor was ever brought to, or attempted to be brought before Congress.
I mean, it's just crazy to me. I mean, I don't think it was his committee is the weaponization
move.
Of government committee. And, this is,
and he's using the government.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that amazing?
Yes, you're right. That's a good point.
But here, the weaponization of government, chairman, I guess he's House Judiciary Chair as well. Evidently, they've issued another subpoena for FBI Director Christopher Wray. Evidently, they're looking into this now. How's it written? Now withdrawn memo that explored avenues for gaining information on white supremacist interaction with local Catholic churches. So, is he arguing the Catholic churches are now in bed with white supremacists, or is he arguing that the FBI shouldn't be looking into white supremacists? I'm not seeing the angles.
Well, I don't know the angle either, and I'll tell you something else I don't know the angle on. What on earth was his thinking to bring the two former employees of the prosecutor Bragg? What was he thinking about bringing them to Congress? Are they going to sit there and say, oh, well, we thought Donald Trump was innocent? No, they're going to lay out an entire idea of why they think he wasn't innocent and that the prosecutor should have acted before. Now, the nuance here is that Jordan's going to say, well, so he didn't act, so why is he acting now? That's the nuance. But let me tell you, you get those two guys sitting before that committee, trust me, Trump's not going to want to hear that. So I don't know his political thinking on that either.
I don't know that there is, and this is the thing that gets me. Is it all just about, hey, look at me? I mean, because as I started today off with, we can't solve problems. We're just not a country that can solve a problem. We can create a bunch of them, but we don't seem to be able to have a government that will solve, or at least D.C. can't solve anything. And this is another one of these things where you're right. If you call those people in, do you really want the answers that you're going to get? I don't know.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you where some of this is coming from. And some of it is also staff driven. When I was in Congress, and I'm seeing it with the way Jordan operates, when I was in Congress, staff would come up with these intricate plots, these intricate ways to get a witness to say this. And I would sometimes look at them and say, why would I want the witness to say that? I don't want the witness to say that. I would then have to dispute everything. I think some of this is like these theories put together by some of his confidants and staffers, and they have, all three or four of them are sitting down there, and they bought into each other's nonsense. That's what I think's happened with him. I really do.
No, I think you've got people.
Because the way he's operating doesn't make rhyme nor reason.
It does if you look at it from the position that I take. That it's not about solving problems, it's about creating new ones. It's about getting attention. If you look at it from that frame, let's see what we can stir up to get some attention, to raise campaign funds, whatever. Or you got people from social media circles going, hey, how can we get the most attention? Then it starts to make a little bit better sense.
Yeah, I agree. Except what's going to eventually happen, though, it's like his weaponization. Look what happened to him. even inside the Republican Party, they were all saying, where's the beef?
Yeah.
You know, like the old Wendy's commercial, where's the beef? Where was it going? What, he didn't have, you know, silver bullets jumping before the committee that everybody said, oh, wow, that's shock and awe. So he does. I agree. He brings out things. Like I said, I think he and some confidants and political strategists sit down and say, well, let's do this now. Let's do that. Let's bring these two guys in. But I just feel, because they're not getting anywhere, if this continues time after time after time, pretty soon, you know, the attention goes away from him, and he's somebody that's not a person of substance.
Yeah, no shock, just a lot of, aw.
Yeah, the short term, he's going to get some entertainment press. In the long term, I think eventually it's like, okay, it's time, you can go away now.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it's not a lot of shock, just a lot of, aw, bless your heart. I got to get your thought on this. The guy who's the chairman of the House Federal Foreign Affairs Committee, this Michael McCaul, evidently told Fox News that if China invades Taiwan, and we've been talking about this for a while, he believes that there's congressional authority, that congressional authority of using U.S. troops is something, a distinct possibility? Thoughts on why this would be a distinct possibility for Republicans, but maybe not Ukraine? Because I see them kind of in the same bag. I'm curious if you got a thought.
I think he actually tied some of it to the chips, too, chip production, if I heard one of his scenarios correctly. But, you know, he said that the U.S. may send troops to Taiwan. You know, he put it out on the table. Should China invade. And he said, in fact, he said something effective. It certainly would be on the table. That would be discussed by Congress. And I just don't see it. First of all, the Congress is not going to sit there and make a debate on a war resolution. If anything, they're going to give let the White House take the lead, and then they can either criticize them or agree with them. They'll let the White House take the lead or not. I just don't see a rally behind, you know, this congressman, because he's head of foreign affairs and he says, it's troops are on the table. That's not really his call.
Yeah.
Unless he wants to do a resolution, that's not his call.
Yeah,
that's the call of the President of the United States.
I thought it was odd for one of them to come out and say that it's on the table when when they seem so pro-Russia. I don't know. It just seems odd. Lastly,
it might sell well in Texas, though, you know?
Yeah, good point. Lastly, I got to get your thought on this. I know you spend a lot of time in India. This story with the Dalai Lama has got me, and I did bring up the Catholic Church a minute ago, so there might be a tie here. What the hell's with the Dalai Lama?
I am beyond myself. I have had so many phone calls today from friends of mine because, we've met with him. I met with him when I was in Congress, met with him over in Dharamsala. The Dalai Lama has always been this wonderful, you know, person, this icon, and what happened? I mean, I can't put my mind around it. I'm just starting to think that at his age, he's developing a dementia.
Okay, so we're going with the
maybe
dementia.
And they keep his handlers keep him going. I mean, something has went horribly wrong.
Yeah, I'm sorry. When you're asking someone to suck your tongue, for those who don't know, evidently, the video is disturbing. But
I watched it. It's beyond disturbing. Beyond.
Yeah, this idea that the kids are. He kissed the kid on the lips, and then he stuck his tongue out there. The kid and said, "Suck my tongue," and I'm going, I'm confused. I thought that's the Catholic Church's purview.
Well, and the fact that he did it publicly, this is my argument about dementia, I guess. He hasn't been known to do these things.
Yeah.
I've never even heard anything in private about him or public.
Because I was saying, maybe this is an Indian cultural thing. Maybe
it's something weird
that I've never heard of.
No, that's the Indian kids groups are very upset. No, it's definitely not an Indian cultural thing. And Tibetans will stick their tongue out as sort of a greeting. It's an old ancient thing, but nobody says suck my tongue. That's not on the website. You know, just sticking the tongue out's another thing. And he did this in a, public, obvious forum with all these kids and families and everything. My friend and I, and you know, she knows the Dalai Lama pretty good, and we talked tonight. And the only thing we can come up with is that he has, you know, potentially launched into dementia.
Yeah.
To sit there and do that and do it publicly is, I just can't even get my head around it.
Yeah, this should probably be the last public display.
Exactly.
This should probably be the end. But Bob, that's the reason I went to you. You always have the information. I appreciate you taking time for us and sharing.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
I saw the video. I thought it was weird, and I had to ask. Take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1930. That was the day Dolores Huerta was born in the mining town of Dawson, New Mexico. When her parents divorced, she moved with her mother to Stockton, California. It was there that Dolores experienced firsthand the discrimination that too often shaped Mexican immigrant children's daily lives. She studied to become a teacher. As a teacher, she was greatly disturbed by the poverty of the farm workers' children that came into her classroom. She decided to leave teaching to organize farm workers. So strong was her conviction, she made this decision to leave her secure job, even though she had children of her own and the organizing position was unpaid. She partnered with Cesar Chavez to form the National Farm Workers Association, a predecessor of the United Farm Workers. She served as vice president of the UFW until 1999. She was a key organizer in the successful California grape boycott of the 1960s. That boycott won first-time union recognition for thousands of farm workers. In 1975, she was instrumental in the passage of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act. In 1988, she was at a rally in San Francisco against the proposed policies of presidential candidate George H.W. Bush. The police violently broke up the protest. Police broke her ribs. They beat her so badly, she had to have her spleen removed. When she won a judgment against the police, she donated her settlement to farm workers. In 2011, she was awarded the National Medal of Freedom for her life of sacrifice for social justice. Several songs, or corridos, have been written in her honor, including this one by popular band Los Lobos.
En Dawson, Nuevo México, el 10 de abril, nació Dolores Huerta. Nadie se lo imaginaba que ella iría encabezar
parte de... Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. So here's some news. You got Representative McCall saying, hey, it's on the table. We might be going into Taiwan. Also, you've got more Republicans saying that we should be bombing Mexico. So for all those people going, you know, Donald Trump didn't get us in any wars, I think the Republican Party is kind of wanting to move us in that direction. We're gonna bomb Mexico. Yeah, okay. Let's see how that works out. Also, interesting story. As they're cleaning up East Palestine, I guess today this just happened. A truck carrying what they're calling toxic soil evidently crashed on State Route 165 near Waterford Road in Columbiana County in Ohio. You've got the local fire department, you got the Environmental Protection Agency, all the people at the scene. Don't worry, it's toxic, but it's not a threat. You'll be just fine. That's what they're saying. I don't know. I wonder where they're taking it. See, this is where my mind went. I go, okay, you're going to move the toxic soil from East Palestine because you don't want the people there who've been exposed to it to have to live with it. And where are you going to move that? My first thought was Scranton. Because evidently, you know, New Jersey dumps everything in Scranton. You know, why not Ohio? Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. I'm going to follow that a little bit. The thing I'm looking for this week, and I love the fact that Joe Biden is out touting the economic plan, touting the job creation plans, touting the investments in the country. What I'm going to be spending time looking at this week is, you know, how well that's
They are our cuddlers and coworkers, purr machines and love bugs, and constant companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life so much better. When we face unexpected challenges in life, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people who love their pets and the pets who love their people, ensuring these families stay exactly where they belong, together. And you have something to offer. With an open heart and mind, there is nothing you can't do. There's no gesture too small or too big when it comes to helping. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. You can help keep pets and people together. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE broadcast.